Welcome to Soroka Speaks, coaching minds and elevating careers. We're so happy to have you here. We hope that you enjoy this episode and that it supports you to put your potential in motion.
What's up, everyone? We are back. This is Soroka Speaks. I am your co-host, Emily Haruko-Li, and I am here with my lovely co-host.
It's Claire. I'm honestly going to do that every time. I'm not going
to
lie.
Good. I expect you to now.
All right. Welcome everybody. Yep.
Today we are talking about what growth in leadership looks like. We're talking about what makes a great leader. We're talking about what doesn't make a great leader today. We'll talk about a little bit of our experience as leaders and with leaders in our own career journeys. And I think we're going to start us off just by inviting everybody to look at leadership in this conversation through the perspective of leading yourself first and foremost. We are all leaders. We are all leaders of our own life and our own career and our own decisions. And sometimes that power or that leadership is more available to people. So we're going to talk a little bit about how do we grow that. But that's our invitation as you're listening to this. So whether you are a manager of people or not, consider that, you know, this conversation is around the context of who are you as a leader, as an individual leading yourself and your life every day. And of course, we will talk a little bit about what it looks like to also lead a team. So Claire, tell us a little bit about what prompted this idea. We were talking a little bit about a story from your past, and maybe you want to kick us off by sharing the inspiration for this topic.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I think about who I am as a person, how I show up as a coach, how I show up in leading teams, leading myself, leading my family, I think about all the influences that I've had in my life, both personally and professionally. And since this podcast and this episode is about sort of leading ourselves within life and business, I was really sort of reflecting back on a couple of people that showed me what is a great leader and also what is not a great leader. And I'm going to start with the bad, actually, because it's always, you know, it's always a little bit more interesting, right? So I think I was maybe 20, 21, and I got a job in London, actually completely out of the gambling industry. This is really a random fact. I worked for about 3 months for the National Farmers Union. Totally random. Bit of a wild card.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds totally like you.
Of course. Yeah, exactly. And I was joined as one of the secretaries. So I interviewed for the role and the senior boss of the entire department loved me. His lead secretary did not like me and hired somebody else in my place. Absolutely fine. You know, these things happen. Then they needed a second secretary because the department was growing really quickly and they needed more support. So the lead secretary got overridden by the main boss who then hired me. She persisted to make my life hell for 3 months until I could not take it anymore and quit. She redlined every single document that I ever wrote. She had to proofread everything, even if it got approved by the person that I was writing for. And we did a lot of the audio recordings, you know, where they would speak into a dictaphone and you would have to listen and type. So there was a lot of that back in that time. And I'd get it approved by whoever I was writing for. She would want to oversee it and completely redlined everything, made me rewrite everything. And I started to notice this pattern of every single document that I did, there was like the entire thing was almost rewritten. So I started to keep a copy of it. And one day I pulled her up on it because she had rewritten and redlined the document back to my original format. It was almost identical. So she had made me change it, redlined it again, sent it back. And I'm like, this was exactly what I presented to you the first time. it was horrific. And I needed to go to the doctors once I had an infection, a skin infection. Really, another random fact, I burnt my leg on a motorbike exhaust pipe getting off the bike, and it got infected, and I was not allowed time off to go for the doctor until she saw my leg weeping in the office. And yeah, and then she said, "You're a stupid girl. Why have you not been to the doctor?" And I went, "I asked you to go to the doctor a week ago and you wouldn't allow me the time off to go." "Well, you need to find a doctor that's 5 minutes from the office and then you can go. Doesn't matter that I've been at the same family doctor for 20 years. I have to find one 5 minutes around the office." And you know what happened when I went in and quit to the main boss? He said, turned around to me and said, "I'm not surprised. I'm surprised you lasted this long." And I think, you have seen this happen. I sat outside his office working. You saw this happen to me for 3 months, this bullying, this constant, you know, nothing was ever good enough. There was nothing inspiring at all about this woman, with the exception of how not to lead others and how not to treat other people in business. And I always, you know, 20 years later, think about that woman and how she treated me. And it kind of spurred me on to never, ever want to treat anybody that way, because it was horrific. The worst 3 months of my business career, I think.
Well, it really shapes you, right? It gives you the fortitude to sort of deal with, you know, or be fortified to anticipate the potential leadership that might come down the pipe in the future, yeah. Which is unfortunate. But I think that, you know, the longer you work, the more you will be exposed to various types of leadership. And what's interesting is to notice the impact of what those different types of leadership has on you, on the individual.
Mm. Yeah. Have you had any stories in your career that's been,
as we're rolling on this topic, it's really interesting. I was thinking about, so I am self-diagnosed, you know, neurodivergent. I've never been tested, but I know as this term and this education, has become a little bit more widespread, I can see the neurodivergence in myself, and I can see how it's played out in my life. So one of the thing about neurodivergent people is we're much more inclined to work for ourselves. And I think, you know that I incorporated my first business when I was 19. And I have been an employee, I think, twice. I've been a contractor for a lot of companies, right? So I have been a contractor and worked for a lot of companies, and I've worked in corporate, and I had 4 years in corporate and advertising and marketing. So I have I digress. What I was thinking about was what is the influence on leadership? And I can say those 4 years in corporate, I had a very, very challenging manager. And I had worked my way up in the company a little bit. So I don't know if perhaps he saw me as very junior. And we had this open concept office, and our backs would face each other, right? So we faced away from each other in an open concept office. So our backs were together. So we didn't stare at each other, but we would roll our chairs around and converse and, you know, working on stuff. And I reported to him. And, you know, I don't remember what the catalyst was, but I can be a little bit fiery. And I remember one afternoon that I don't exactly remember what I said, but, you know, my mammalian brain got hijacked. My amygdala was triggered. And I stood up in this open concept office and told him right where to take it, grabbed my shit and walked out. I didn't quit, but I walked out. I was very committed, and I had a very, very close relationship with my CEO, and the CEO was who hired me. Anyways, so that was an extreme example that shows up in terms of I can't, maybe much like you in your 3 months, I can't tolerate non-human centered behavior, particularly in a professional environment. So then I was thinking furthermore, I thought I'd just add this funny anecdote. My very first job, 14 years old, living in Seattle, Washington, and I got a job at Pagliacci's Pizza. So if you've ever been to Seattle or you are a Seattleite, you will know Pagliacci's Pizza. It is a chain in the city. I don't know if their pizza is still good, but it was really great at the time. I was in grade 10, And I had one afternoon after school on my way back before a work shift, I had decided to go to Nordstrom. And I had had a little bit of success stealing, actually, at the time. I had a little five-finger discount hobby, if you might call it. And I went to Nordstrom, of all places, and I decided to try on a bunch of clothes under my clothes, took them to the bathroom. Anyways, long story short, I got busted for shoplifting. I was $1 away from the merchandise being considered a felony, and I had to go to work. So, like, I had to get, these people couldn't get a hold of my parents. I was late for work, and I was like, and I told my work what happened. And I remembered my boss at work, the grace that was extended to me. I was like, I handled cash. Like, I was like the salad and the cash girl. Like, the fact that he had so much grace and was like, I'm so sorry that happened. Like, he could probably see the distraughtness on my face. Mm-hmm. I'm a good person. I would never steal. I might have tried to steal some clothes from Nordstrom's, but I never steal cash from my employer. I don't know where that stacks on the morality scale as a 14-year-old, but that was very clear to me. And something about that manager, it was like he knew that. It was like he saw that in me. It was like he still saw the good person I was, even though I had just done this really shitty, stupid thing. Yeah. So those are maybe sort of this sort of two extremes of leadership that was exposed to me in the workplace, sort of to varying degrees. Also, both at pretty young stages of my life, like that was 14 and 24, those stories, or 24 and 14, respectively. So, that's a little insight into some of my stories there. We also lived in the States and we're Canadian. So had I committed that felony, $1 away, like I could have potentially got my family like kicked out of the fucking country. Excuse me, pardon my language. Do we swear on this podcast? I think we do. It's our podcast.
It's our podcast. And you know that I have a bit of a potty mouth. I try and rein it in.
Just ask anyone in your leadership program.
I did not know that story about you. And I can't believe I've known you 15 years and did not know that little dark secret of yours.
I got a few of them in there. That's the shame. Those shame pieces that I've done a lot of work around.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, we make decisions as a child that we learn from, right? And we grow from those decisions and mistakes that we make. And whether they're pretty epic on the scale of $1 away from a felony, or they're, you know, more simple mistakes in the communication and the anger and the frustration and the our communication style, right? We all have mistakes and things that we need to overcome, and that does shape who we are and does shape how we show up, you know. And it is, like we talked about, this episode is about growth mindset. It, how do we learn from that and keep moving and keep growing forward and not live with that shame for 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. We can be regretful and we can be, you know, I don't know whether humble would be the right word, but that you kind of had the grace from your employer to say, it's okay, you made a mistake and you did fuck up, but I know who you are and that isn't who you are. And that doesn't define who you are here with us. And I think that's really powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And that was deploying the growth mindset for sure, of which unfortunately my latter manager that I mentioned definitely did not. Very fixed mindset, very... you know, we teach leadership styles and leadership methods at Soroka, right? And so when I think about that, if I was going to categorize, you know, that style of leadership was very autocratic, very transactional, you know, not transformational, not human-centered. And here's the thing, I think about, you know, one of the other distinctions we teach is Kim Scott's radical candor. And I think about that radical candor quadrant and the style of communication, which I believe is also the type of communication that comes from toxic leadership, is that obnoxious aggression, which is, you know, criticizing people in public, giving feedback in public, you know, shaming, pointing the finger, arrogance, like often loud, attacking, right? This negative motivation, And, you know, I might suggest even that the boomers' default leadership style is probably more that than it is transformational or, you know, human-centered or laissez-faire for that matter, right?
Yeah.
So I think as we evolve and as each generation gets older, I think the default leadership style is changing in the corporate world, but I think it's taking some time. And I don't think it's where it needs to be in terms of what I observe as on average as a whole.
Yeah.
What do you think? Regard.
No, I do agree with you. I think it is changing and there's a lot more education around it as well. And a lot more people are mindful of that, you know, and like you say, as society changes as well, people's expectations are different. The way people show up to work are different. The way that people's tolerance are different, right? But 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, it was that aggression. That's how you got the work done, right? You just kept almost beating that horse until you got the best out of people and got them to do what you wanted to do. And now it's not like that. It is more collaborative. It is more human-centered, like you mentioned. You know, it goes a long way. Had I been given that doctor's appointment, you know, it would have I'd be like, okay, she gets, you know, she's not a complete monster. I can actually, she does see that I'm human and that I have needs and stuff like that. And that was something that I really, when I had a team, I was very mindful when people are poorly or they're under the weather or they're just feeling completely overwhelmed. Okay, let's take a minute. Let's take what you need. Because then that's where you get the best out of people. They're loyal to you. They trust you. They know that you have their back through the good and the bad, right? You celebrate the wins and then the losses or the negatives. You're still there supporting them and handling that as a team. And I think that's really important. And that is a massive shift that's happening. It's slow, but it's happening.
My perspective is that, you know, and I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, like maybe I don't show up like this as a leader, but this is my philosophy. And this is what I feel like I started to do almost as a default. And now I endeavor to do it very intentionally. I endeavor to do it genuinely, but very intentionally. And that is building a very high level of rapport with the people that I work with, right? Creating as close a relationship as I can that feels genuine. So we're really lucky, we're a small team, that I genuinely love all of you. And I would be friends and hang out with all of you. Like, that's definitely not the case that I've had. And we're a core team of four, for those of you guys that don't know us. So as we grow, that may change. But when it comes to our core team, so it's easy to build rapport for me, I find, because I love you guys and I'm genuinely curious and I genuinely want the best for you and I genuinely care for you. But here's where that also is beneficial, is that in times where we need to have feedback, either way, you need to provide feedback to me, I need to provide feedback to you, we've got feedback for the team, whatever it is. We have such a valuable, we have such a high balance of currency in our relational currency that we can have hard conversations. We can provide each other feedback in a way because we know that the care underneath that feedback is genuine. When you do not have a high level of rapport with your team, when that relational currency isn't in place, then you have a much more challenging time delivering feedback, but more importantly, that feedback landing and those people wanting to take corrective action with the feedback. So, you know, it's like it, and that's what I mean by human-centered. It's like, care about who you work with, like to the best of your genuine ability. Can you put in some effort? Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I mean, I agree with you. And I think it does land different. And that comes on building that trust and building those relationships. And you know, like you mentioned, it is easy because we're a team of four, but it's not to say that that can't be done in a team of 20, right?
Agreed.
It's taking that time that and showing the willing and showing who you are and why they're on your team and what you're doing to show up for them as their leader, you know, and I think it really does go a long way. I actually still speak to quite a few of my old bosses, and I consider them some of my mentors. I'll go to them for advice, suggestions, a pick me up, you know, if I need it. And it really goes a long way, that trust that we've built over the years. And I think it's so important. And like you say, it comes from a place of authenticity. You're genuine when you show up for them conversations. People can feel it if you're fake and you're just saying things for the sake of it, right? You can totally see through people when they're like that. That's not what we're talking about. It is showing up and really just asking the genuine questions, knowing what's going on with them, what makes them tick. And once you know all of those things, you are going to get the best out of them as employees. You're going to get the best out of yourself, right? You're building this rapport that you know as well that your team have your back and support you. So I think it goes both ways, and it really helps strengthen leadership. It really helps strengthen teams.
I love that. It's a beautiful segue to what it means to lead ourselves, because as we talk about the ability to be authentic and to build genuine connections and create genuine curiosity, nobody can do authentic or genuine for us. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to leading ourselves every day and how we show up to ensure that we are facilitating genuine and authentic connections, I think that's the part where, like, that's the personal growth piece, right? That's the leading ourself piece, because I've got to accept who I am if I'm going to show up authentically. And that's not always easy. And I think we're probably all in some varying degree of that relationship with ourself in terms of that acceptance and the ability to and the courage to show up authentically and genuinely, you know, keeping at bay that fear of being judged or, you know, wanting to be liked or that, you know, the human conditions of being accepted, which really, you know, at a primal level is just hardwired in our DNA because we're tribal creatures and we want to belong and we thrive in community. And so it's natural where those feelings come from. But anyways, I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting perspective, leading ourselves. So what does that mean for you in terms of being genuine, showing up authentically, leading yourself every day? Tell us about how the growth-oriented mindset has supported you to do that.
You know, I feel like most of my life I've had a growth mindset. And I feel like I've always wanted to just be the best version of myself. Sometimes that version is ugly. Let me tell you, it is ugly. You know, my communication can be really poor. If I'm coming from a place of anger, I'm coming from a place of fear, I'm not the best communicator. But what I have learned is to remove myself from those situations. I need a minute, or actually for me, if I'm in a place where I can't regulate my emotions, I actually take myself to bed and I go to sleep, and then it's almost like a reset for me. And I've learned that over the years, and it doesn't necessarily work, especially in my relationships. Sometimes, you know, my husband will want to talk about things, and I know that I can't rationalize my thoughts and communication because I'm overpowered by emotion. So he's learned to understand I need to just go and take a nap and I'll come back and we can resolve everything actually in a constructive way. Because I cannot. I've just learned that over the years. But, you know, I do try and always be genuine. I do try and always come with an open heart and to any situation and relationship, work or otherwise. You know, I want to know. I was having a conversation yesterday with somebody in the industry that I've known as an acquaintance for a few years. And I was checking if he's coming to the upcoming show. And he said, actually, I'm not, because I'm due to have a baby in the next few weeks. So we had this enormous conversation about what it's like to be a new parent. And I was genuinely like, please keep me posted. I actually hope your baby's 2 weeks late, because then they'll be born on my birthday. And, you know, it was just, I felt like it was such a genuine, lovely conversation. And I've only met him, you know, in person a few times over the last few years. And I just thought that's how I've managed to keep relationships in this industry for over 20 years. And I do know, and I feel proud that people will say, you know, Claire is one of the nicest people in the industry, because I do. I genuinely care. I'm interested in you for business, I'm interested in you from the personal side of things. And if we never do business, I will still treat you, you know, with so much grace and love and friendship and whatever I can offer. And I think that that's really, you know, how I show up in the industry, how I show up for myself. And I do try and do the same in personal life as well, you know, and I really do try and always just be a great human. And I try and inspire others where I can as well. If we want to loop that into leadership, I try and inspire others to believe in themselves and give them the confidence and empower them to you know, want to achieve their goals and think that they can achieve their goals, like dream bigger. So me as kind of a leader of others, whilst, you know, we have a small team and things like that, but as a coach, and I do it with my kids, you know, I'm like, what do you want to be? What do you want to achieve? Because you can do anything. And I always tell them, I want you to be better than me and achieve more than me. I want you to have like everything that I have and even more. Like, I want you to have the world. So I empower my kids like forever. I just, I'm really passionate about that as well. I know it digressed from into family life, but I think it's important. You know, that's who I am and how I show up.
Well, and that's perfectly relatable to we don't only lead ourselves in one particular domain of life. We lead ourselves in every area of life, parenthood, home life, like domestic stuff, relational stuff, you know, professional, acquaintance, social, like it's all, we're leading ourselves all the time. I think that's the empowering perspective that we're inviting everyone to, is like, looking at, you have some influence over all of these things because it's you doing them, or at least you co-creating them anyways. But you said something really cool that I loved, that made me sort of think, you know, you said, first of all, that you're sort of like always had a bit of like a natural growth mindset, maybe an natural inclination to leadership, which is amazing. And, you know, I don't think everybody has that. I don't think everybody's cut out to be a people leader. I'm not saying you can't learn those skills. Of course, that's the essence of growth mindset. You can do anything with cultivation and time and patience and dedication and commitment. But the idea that you kind of stand for this, what I heard was like, you're standing in what's possible. This is what I heard. You're standing in what's possible for your kids. You're standing in what's possible for you and for your career. And what I believe about the ability to stand in possibility as a leader, that is transformational leadership. Transformational leadership is, you know, knowing where you want to go and understanding that the journey to get there is going to reveal what is required of you, both personally, professionally, energetically, emotionally, spiritually, whatever it is, for you to be able to like bridge that gap and get to where you want to go. You need to stand in possibility. You need to become, you know, a version of yourself. You have to deploy a growth mindset. And the essence of all of that is transformational leadership. And you, my dear, are truly a transformational leader.
Thank you, darling. Thank you. I appreciate that. What about, I mean, you segue to you. Let's not be all about Claire. As much as I love it. Let's talk about your qualities, because you inspire me as well every day. You know, I think what we're creating with Soroka is incredible, and you've already had such an, you know, such a huge career in the last 10 years in your coaching sort of life. And you're also a single mother as well, which, you know, everyone knows that parenthood is the hardest job ever. So I think, you know, single parents as well is even harder to juggle all of that, navigate everything, as well as create a business, run a successful business, and keep, you know, inspiring others around you. So where does that, you know, either where does that come from? I know that we touched on it before about some of that's from your dad and your upbringing, but that's also part of just who you are. Like, it's ingrained and runs through your blood, right? This leadership and trying to inspire others.
Where does it come from? I mean, gosh, that is such an interesting question. Like, I don't know. I'm sure it has a lot to do with the environment that I grew up in, right? And my, you know,
for, I may have mentioned if you haven't listened to our first or one of our first episodes, but, you know, I come by this work honestly in the sense that I'm a second generation, I consider myself a second generation transformational leader. My father's, you know, was part of the group that sort of pioneered coaching back in the 80s, at least sort of in North America. And his business partner, who recently just passed away, God rest your soul, Jim, wrote the very first published article on coaching in business ever, right? And they, you know, that was my dad's business partner for 40 years. So I come by this work very honestly, but I would probably be lying if I said there wasn't like a some kind of a, I don't want to say natural knack or like, is this is like, I've never felt more on purpose in my life. That's what I can say, right? Like all of the journey from direct sales to, yeah, starting my first business at 19 to all of these things that were not coaching, right? Led me to where I am and gave me the kind of business experience that I needed to be able to take my skill as a coach, which I think came from a lot of training and practice, but also a bit of inherent, maybe, I don't want to say nepotism because not like I didn't work for it, but right, like I come by it honestly, like my dad's been teaching me distinctions around distinctions since I could comprehend English, right? So there's certain things that are just like ingrained into me that I know influence the way that I think and the way that I show up. But naturally, just as a human, as a soul in a human body, I think I've done some work around my essence, right? Like who, like, okay, now we're going to get woo and a little deep. But here's what I believe, right? Especially like if you don't have a great relationship with your biological family, it's like to remember that, sure, I am my father's daughter, 100%. And if you know us at all, then you can say, yeah, like we're there's parts of us that are a lot alike. And I am my mother's daughter, of course. But my parents were just the vehicle through which I arrived here, right? Like I truly am like a daughter of the universe, if you will. Now I might start losing people. This is our podcast. This is my personal beliefs. This is what I think. I really do believe like 4 trillion things have to go right for you to be born, for like that right embryo to meet that, you know, right sperm and the right time of the month, and even beyond that, for your parents to be here, blah, 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 blah. Like literally 4 trillion things have to happen for you to have this conscious experience. You are a child of your parents. You are a child of the universe. You are literally, it's proven, made of stardust. Like if that saying, I love it. It's so cliche, but like, people say they don't believe in miracles. They forget they are one. Like, this is the wonder of life. This is the beauty of life. So where does it come from? Probably some soul searching along the way that is recognizing who the fuck I really am. And I am this spirit and this soul, but I'm also this human who happens to be a woman that lives in society that is exposed to all kinds of things and pressures and single mom and blah, 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 all those things. Like I am all of those things. And I think maybe what part of what makes me a great leader is my ability to be with all of those things. And I don't want to sit here and say like, I'm a great leader. That feels really, I think I value humility. And I think I'm teetering one of my growth edges is, and we've talked about this all the time, is like, it's not boasting if it's true, right?
Yeah.
How you communicate it could be perceived as boasting for sure, but it's not boasting if it's true. And we've been working together long enough now, and we have, you know, a moderately successful business and we have a great team. So I think I have some ammunition or some foundation to say like, yeah, I believe I'm doing the very best job I can as a leader. And I've got a long way to go in terms of what I know, who I want to become and where I want to lead our business and, you know, what I want to in the possibilities that I want to invite all of us to live into. So I didn't really answer your question there, or maybe I did, depending on your perspective, but...
No, that was the perfect answer. And I think just touching on one of the final points you made about, you know, being boastful. And I think someone called me that recently and it really hurt my feelings. And because I don't feel like I'm boastful at all. I could be, you know, I could talk about so many things that I do in my life and I don't. And sometimes I do. And when I talk about them, it's never, ever from a boastful place, because I think I'm just proud of the things that I've done and I'm proud of the things that I've achieved. And it's not like, you know, I don't come from money. I've not got a silver spoon. I've not, you know, been given a career. I've worked for absolutely everything. And like you, you know, I started babysitting, I think, when I was 13, and I had my first job. I think I worked in a department store. I think I was 15 or 16. Whenever I could first work, I was in it, you know, I was working. And sometimes I've had two jobs at a time. And I just think, you know, if I talk about things, one, it's from a place of, this is who I am. And this is, you know, why I behave the way I do, or why I have the things that I have. Because some people say, oh, well, you're just lucky. You're lucky you have that. You're lucky. Well, no, you know, I didn't win the lottery, or I didn't just, like, I wasn't just woke up one day and decided I'm going to be a coach. No, I worked for 2.5 years at college to educate myself to be a coach. I've been learning to be a leader for over 20 years of my career, like leading myself and then trying to be a mentor and trying to, you know, lead teams. And I think it's really important to think about how we talk about our achievements, because there's so many people that are afraid to just say, I was nominated for an award. Good, shout it from the rooftops. You really deserve to talk about that. You were nominated, you were shortlisted, you won. You should be proud of that. You worked hard from that. You got a bigger house, or you bought your dream car. Be proud of that. Be proud that you bought your dream car. Like, you worked for that. You won the lottery. Okay, well done. That was probably luck. But, you know, otherwise, you know, you still made the decision to spend your money on the car. That was a good decision. It made you happy and filled your cup with joy. But I think you should just come from a place of being genuine and being proud of your actions and being proud of your achievements. And I think sometimes we forget that.
I love that.
So you should be proud of yourself and, you know, what you have in your career.
And you as well. And okay, two things. One is, and I don't know, and I'm not committed to being right or wrong, but I have an assessment or like a curiosity around, like, I make up, and you probably know, like, relatively speaking, whoever this person was that said you were boosting, I make up, and again, I'm not committed to being right or wrong, but I bet you, if I was a betting lady, I might say that that person probably has not accomplished what you have in your life, or perceives to themselves that they probably have not accomplished what you have in your life. My sense is this person probably has not accomplished more than you in your life. And am I accurate in that assumption?
That is somewhat accurate. Yeah, I would say that. And I also think that they just don't really know me, the real me, like, to, you know, my values and my beliefs and what makes me tick and why I operate the way I do. You just don't know me well enough to make any assumption like that on me.
Yeah, that's fair. I think if I, like, you know, with all due respect to this person, if I were to call you that, you'd be like, well, what the fuck? Like, tell me more, because we know each other you'd be like, what do you, where am I coming from? And it reminds me kind of sometimes of these people that, like, okay, if you want to put yourself out there, maybe you are starting a podcast, or you're trying to build your social media, or you want to write a book, and or you've written a book and you're like promoting it or whatever. Nobody that has ever walked that path will ever judge you for going for it. The people that are not going for it in their life, they will be the ones to judge you. And it's really important that we let the judgment that we let in be only of ourselves, and even then only to a degree that will support our growth optimally. I want to just share one thing about the car thing, and like a testament to the growth. So about 2 years ago, probably, I think it was like about 2 years ago ish. No, it wouldn't have been. Anyways, whatever. A year and a half, 2 years, 2.5 years, sometime within the last 3 years, I was sitting at my ex-boyfriend's kitchen table. And for those of you guys that don't know me, I am a Jeep girl. I love Jeeps. My parents had 3 Jeeps growing up. I had a Jeep for the last 7 years, and I now have a new Jeep. And so sitting at my ex-boyfriend's kitchen table, and he has 2 sons, like, they were big car guys. And I like cars, I've always liked cars, and I love Jeeps. So I was just kind of cruising around, and I find that Jeep's coming out with a hybrid SUV, the 4xe. I said, I will drive that car one day. And lo and behold, what am I, 2 or 3 months into the 2023? It's a 2023. It was still new to me. But 2023 Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe. And that's because we stayed committed to our business, to our growth, to our leadership, to serving our clients. Like, that vehicle really is a testament to a growth mindset and to the power of manifestation, because I was literally like, I love Jeeps. The idea of a hybrid was appealing to me. I was like, I will drive that car. And then and it was funny. I actually I ran into, or I saw my ex, and I drove up and he goes, "You did it." And I was like, "Yep, I did it.
Yes, here I did."
Yeah.
I love that. I did the same a few years ago. I always wanted a Range Rover Evoque. And it was like on my list, you know, one day I'm going to own that. One day, one day, one day. Well, I have 4 kids, so I can't fit in any boat. So I have a Land Rover Discovery, which is the next best thing. It fits my family. You know, we're a family of 6, so it fits all of us in there. But it was the same. I was so proud the day that I got that. And it wasn't brand new. It was secondhand. And I'm happy with that. Like, I'm just so proud that I was able to, one, manifest it because I put it on my vision board, like, one day I'm going to have this car, and two, that it came true. And I thought, I'm really proud of myself for that, the same as you. And, you know, to others, it may not be important. It might be something totally different that's important to them. But for us, it was. So, yeah, I was like,
listen, people, it doesn't have to be a car for you, okay? Just because Sarah and I want vehicles and to go to Tiffany and Louie doesn't mean that's what you need to want. No, really. What inspires you? What motivates you? And what's celebratory? What's a gift? Like, what's a testament to your hard work that you can look at and be like, oh, this means something?
Yeah, we should do that. We should reward ourselves for our hard work and our achievements. And, you know, it could be something small. It could be go for dinner, go buy your favorite bottle of wine. Normally you buy like the £6, you know, special offer wine. Maybe you go for the £20 one because you hit your target or you did something. It could be the smallest win, but I think it's important to stay on track and stay motivated and just, you know, reward ourselves for all our hard work. Massive believer of that.
I believe it too, because, you know, unfortunately, we're a little bit like dogs in the sense that we really respond well to reward. So it's important that we take time to celebrate our wins, to own our truth, to own our wins, to stay growth oriented when maybe we're not winning so much, and really just resilience, like keep going. Any final thoughts that you want to add in terms of our leadership discussion, or, you know, who you are as a leader, or any final thoughts? Anything left unsaid?
Shall we just highlight a few key points of what does make a great leader? Because we have talked about, you know, what doesn't make a great leader, how we show up as leaders and how we try and, you know, inspire others. Perhaps we can just list a couple of qualities that people can look for in themselves. You know, just take a look and do some self-reflection over. Let's list 3 or 4, 5 of the qualities, and just do some self-reflection to see,
you know what we should do?
If this resonates. Yeah.
Can we look at it through the lens of domains of trust? Because I think, like, even as I look at this list that we kind of, you know, determined over here, like, a lot of that really can be summed up through domains, which I think is, like, probably if you wanted some nuggets in terms of, like, how to refine your leadership, like, focus on these things.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to kick us off?
Okay, sure. So I'll share with everyone the 6 domains of trust that we teach here at Soroka, which are authenticity, empathy, capability, logic, reliability, and capacity. So when I think about, like, cultivating optimal leadership, it's like you want to look at your performance and your output and your relationships and your deliverables and your word, your agreements through these. You can look at it through the lens of these 6 domains and, you know, make sure that you are cultivating trust and demonstrating what it looks like to lead in action in all of these domains. From domains of trust for you, or it could be outside of those 6 domains, but what do you know if you, like, what's the essence of optimal leadership for you, Claire? What are some of those distinctions for you that you would leave our audience with?
Yeah, absolutely. I think empathy is a great one. I love that. And that comes from my bad experience, right? My manager was not empathetic, not sympathetic. There was no human approach whatsoever in her leadership style. So I really try and understand where others are coming from with the empathy. We've talked a lot at the start of this podcast about authenticity and being genuine and showing up really, you know, as your true self. And I think that's what I try and do on a daily basis to lead myself. And really, trust for me is so important. And we've talked about this so much. I think we talked about it today. You know, I do trust you and your decisions and your logic. And I trust you with everything, honestly, you know. And I hope and I believe that you trust me and where I come from, and that I will show up always as my genuine self. And when I can't do something, I'll tell you. And that I just, you know, people understand me and I believe my word almost, you know, like yeah. You said, what is it? My word is my gospel. My
word
your
is legacy. My
truth. Your legacy. And I think that's really, you know, in the pure basics, start with that. Look at how you show up in those areas. Because for me, you know, being a great communicator, being honest, being who you are, really can build that trust. And ultimately, without trust, you've got nothing, right? It's really hard to inspire others. It's really hard to get people on board with your ideas or changes that you want to make. Or, you know, as the team grows, if you got a breakdown in trust, it's going to radiate through that team as well. And I think that's something that people really need to pay attention to.
Beautiful. I love that. And cultivating trust with yourself, you know, again, it all starts on the inside, people. That's where the journey starts.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for listening. We look forward to seeing you on our next episode of Soroka Speaks. We hope that this episode has supported you to put your potential in motion. We look forward to being with you again real soon. Thanks for being here, and ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Bye. Thank you.